are back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. 590, all morning long. Your thoughts and feelings, ponderings on Team Canada's World Cup loss.
Tell us how to feel.
Yeah, help us out here.
I don't quite know how to feel.
And while you're at it, wake and rake selections for tonight's triple header in sports. Big night. Maple Leafs at Detroit. Cleveland here against the Raptors and Monday Night Football Steelers and Colts. Jeff Saturday's team.
Your team.
No, I can't have every team. But I will say, Ross Tucker better have some thoughts on Jeff Saturday at 7:30 when he joins us.
No pressure, Ross.
We're taking your texts this morning. I'm going to read a couple here about your thoughts. Kevin from Orangeville, how much can you really expect from a team that has made it once in 36 years? And I will say that the lack of experience, certainly something that was exploited and very visible over the last two games.
I think that's fair. I just think we needed to be reminded a little bit.
Yeah,
because we were thinking a little bit differently. I think our perspective changed with Belgium. And maybe we needed to dial it back a little bit based on the situation that it was, which was a world-class team that you needed a result from in order to survive at the tournament. It was obviously disappointing, but it wasn't all that surprising. We're connected now with Frank Cervelli, NHL insider and president of hockey content at dailyfaceoff.com. The same issues don't apply to Frank with the United States getting a result on the weekend, at least a draw with England. Their World Cup bid survives, and they'll have a chance to move into the next round. Frank, are you paying much attention to what's going on over there in Qatar?
I am, but the same sort of applies to Tuesday now against Iran, because it's win, and that's the only acceptable result.
Mm-hmm.
And the U.S. is out, so that's some serious pressure.
Yeah, I mean, that's all you could really ask for, though. It's a competitive group. You get a win in your in scenario, and it's a winnable game. At least Iran's played pretty well to start, but getting that result from England puts you in a position to move on. So we'll turn our attention a little bit to the United States, but mostly to hockey and the Toronto Maple Leafs. I could give you the stage here to victory lap, but I think it's worth noting that while we were freaking out about Sheldon Keefe, you were banging the drum on how good of a coach he is, and I think we've seen that play out here with three of the top defensemen out for the Maple Leafs, and the Maple Leafs not only playing their best hockey, but a defensive brand that is really shining. Not that you need validation in any means, but feel a little validated with your Keefe takes?
Not really. I mean, look, this is one of those things that as much as you believe something doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it's going to play out. Not only that, like, things can go sideways in a hurry. And not to take the negative doom and gloom approach on a Monday morning, but you really never know. Like, sometimes, you know, the Leafs have the injuries that they do, and the way this last week played out, a near perfect week, points in all four games and three straight wins to close out the week. With the injuries that the Leafs have, like, you couldn't ask for anything more than that. And I, you know what? It's funny because I don't know that the credit in this case necessarily goes to Sheldon Keefe, but it goes to the players who were ready and willing to knuckle down in that situation and circumstance to play better defensively, knowing, you know, certainly at this point, the lack of experience that they have on the back end right now.
How much of that is led by Mitch Marner and what he's been able to do? Selke candidate worthy.
We always need somebody to circle.
But I mean, Mitch Marner has certainly, I think, led the way here in terms of his play, 16 game point streak, but not even what he's done offensively, but what he's been able to do on the defensive end of the game.
Man, it certainly feels like we're a long way from that game in late October against the Ducks with a couple turnovers and the frustration. And yeah, I mean, look, that's exactly the type of play that you need in terms of helping your team defensively. And I honestly, I think not to dismiss the effort from Marner, but really the entire forward group, that's been one of the big stories of the season, is how well they've played defensively. And that's not really a new development. Like, this team from the very beginning, and it's not just the bottom six, their top players, their top stars, going back to last season and beyond, really are defensively conscious as well. And we talked last week about the idea of whether or not part of that is it more of a push from the coaching staff? Is it a subconscious, basically the way this team is built, that they think they have to play that way in order to be successful? But whatever it is, they're all bought in. There's no question about that.
A lot of things to be positive about when looking at the blue line specifically. I mean, Mac Hollowell surviving in the bottom pairing there. Rasmus Sandin taking a step and looking more and more confident with some power play ice and playing really, really well at 5-on-5 with Timothy Liljegren. But I think the main domino is Mark Giordano. At an $800,000, I think it might be the best non-entry-level contract in the league. Would you go as far as saying that?
I think right now it is. I mean, last year was probably Michael Bunting, right? The Leafs have really found a way to squeeze every ounce of juice out of guys on their roster that aren't making major dollars. Like everyone that's, for the most part, slotted on this team outside of those entry-level deals is really in a spot to succeed, and they've almost always hit a home run in that case. The idea that Giordano was excited for, obviously not excited for the injuries, I should be careful how I explain that, but right away he was like, I wanted more ice time. Like, I'm ready. I'm glad that this opportunity is here. It speaks to his preparation. It speaks to the idea that he doesn't take a day off. Like, you go to, in the summer, the Leafs, he's there every day. Like, he was ready to go, saying, like, at this age, at 38, if I take a day off, there's no chance that I can compete with these guys. Mm-hmm. So he knows it. And he, again, buy-in. Like, he's made a lot of money in his career. He knows it. And now he wanted an opportunity with this team. He's got it. And he's proven that he's still a very capable player in this league, even at age 38.
Well, it feels like it's also a long play, right? Like, for every Giordano, there is a Simmons, but the Maple Leafs are finding a way to bring in the old veterans who can still play a little bit, pay them a little bit less. And then you find yourself like Jason Spezza up in the press box working with Kyle Dubas. Like, I'm not saying this is guaranteed, but it seems like there might be a plan for Mark Giordano moving forward and after his stint as a player with the Leafs. Do you think this isn't like new? You've seen Shane Doan with the Coyotes. Like, this happens around the league. But do you think the Leafs have somewhat of a competitive advantage here that they've created for themselves by creating this opportunity for you to not just be a player, but maybe more than a player and something more than that down the line if you're willing to come and play a role and play that role well?
I mean, first off, that is a clear violation of the CBA. That's something that's even wink, wink promised on the other end of it. So yeah. I don't think there's any of that going on. But you're right. I mean, there are misses. And with Simmons, the miss wasn't in acquiring him. The miss was in extending him. That was the issue. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, what they have a clear advantage in is that they've built a really competitive team, and there's no BS about it. There's no promises being made in the sense that, they have more money stashed away and hey, this is what we'll give you on the next contract. It's very straight up. It's like, all we can promise you is an opportunity. What you do with it from there is up to you. And if you parlay that into something else for yourself in terms of another contract that's bigger somewhere else, that's great and that's on you. But in this case, we have a very limited amount of dollars to go around. This is what we can afford to pay you. But, by and large, and looking at the last few years, we're going to be one of the best teams in the league, and we're going to give you an opportunity to chase the Stanley Cup. And for a lot of players that are at a certain stage in their career that have made money and pocketed it, they're saying, well, it's not about every last dollar. Now it's about having a chance to win. And this is one place that you can come where you know you're going to be treated well. Everything's top-notch. You have focus, eyeballs, and attention, if you like that. And you have a chance to win.
So Matt Murray makes his return over the last couple of games, and he's been quite consistent. I think people are cautiously optimistic with his play because there's always the lingering injury issues. But he knocks the net off quite a few times Friday's game in maybe prime moments for the Minnesota Wild. What do you make of the coincidences of Matt Murray just happening to slide quite heavily into his post? And was there something else there that might be something that the league looks at down the road?
Yeah, I'd be surprised. And if you go on our website, Daily Faceoff, Mike McKenna, former NHL goalie, actually wrote a great piece on Friday specifically about Matt Murray. And he went through all – it was very – detailed, I would say very nerdy in a sense, of why Matt Murray is innocent. He broke down the clips. He showed that part of it is the idea of the posts not being properly installed. Like he said, the ice crews vary so much building to building that that's an issue. Look, that's also coming, full disclosure, obviously, coming from someone that's a card-carrying member of the goalie union. But he's very convinced, and obviously you've seen some opponents upset, namely the Minnesota Wild. But in this case, I'd have to believe Mike in that he's been there, he's done it, he understands what's in play, and he's saying that Matt Murray's the guy that isn't to blame, and that at this point, you need to look elsewhere.
Yeah, if you watch them, I guess it depends on what's coloring your opinion, but it looked like a few of them were maybe a little bit intentional, but a few of them were just the way he plays, where he's definitely using those posts, and if they're not locked into the ice the way they need to be, the net just might come off. So I feel like this thing isn't going to go away. What I hope goes away is the other goaltender issue, this one involving Connor Hellebuck, yeah, where he lost his helmet. He's lying face down on the ice, and a goal goes in against the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, that seems like the one that should be addressed a little bit more seriously than what's going on here with Matt Murray.
Yeah, and I think it will be. I think that's certainly a conversation that's been fired up. And good for Connor Hellebuck, too, who's certainly never been shy to explain the situation and say that something needs to change, to have a firm stance on it. Because I watched that play and sequence many times over, and especially with that type of situation, with a scoring chance, with a goalie who's down without a mask, like, I believe that play needs to be blown dead. And I think the NHL has had a number of chances to look at it. They had a chance in the moment to look at it. I felt like it should have played out differently than it did. And now moving forward, they have an opportunity to get it right in the sense that anytime a goalie's mask comes off, you know, provided that the goalie is not removing it himself, you know, purposely, there should be a stoppage of play. Like, it's just, we've reached a point where that should not be something that someone needs to deal with. And certainly there are, you the one thing you do see a lot too is there are equipment malfunctions where a strap breaks or something, he takes a shot off the mask and then needs to remove it because it does, he needs to grab the attention of the referee, like, hey, this thing is not safe. So good on Connor Hellebuck to step up and say, this is something that needs to change. And we've got the last GM meetings already went by a couple weeks back in Toronto. March, on the other side of the trade deadline, is where I'd imagine this will receive some significant conversation and consideration.
Yeah, that's as dangerous a situation as could possibly develop as what happened with Connor Hellebuck the other night. And I agree, like, yeah, some goaltenders might want to take advantage of it. Some goaltenders might be taking advantage of the fact that the posts aren't nailed down like they should be. And I'm not advocating for more video review, but it should be pretty easy to figure out whether a goaltender is embellishing and whether it's not. Like, if a strap comes off and they shake it off, it should be, you know, that's within their right. But if, you know, they just get stung a little bit, then you can't treat it like a beer league game where it just hits the mask and all of a sudden the whistle blows. So they got to find a happy medium. I'm sure it'll be more complicated than it needs to be, but hopefully they get to that point. Let's go over to Jason Robertson, who has more goals than McDavid all of a sudden, who has one fewer point than McDavid and is on a 15-game point streak with 28 total points over that run. Forget Mitch Marner's point streak. Jason Robertson's got the best in the league. Has he elevated to elite, elite, elite tier, like Hart Trophy conversation tier? Is he at that point this year?
I think so. I mean, to take it a huge step further from where he was at last year, 41 goals and 79 points. I mean, the 18 that he has in 22 games, like, he's on pace for 70 goals, if I'm not mistaken. Like, my math isn't very good, and it's never been very good, but that's absolutely bonkers. And not saying that he's going to get to 70 goals, but, you know, you're looking at his play this year, and you contrast it to last year, and you say, well, you know, 50 to 55 is a very realistic target at this point. He's almost at 20 already, and we're only at a quarter of the season. It's really impressive because I wasn't sure that he'd be able to get to this next year. And clearly, watching his negotiation with the Stars, you know, I bet, first off, that contract looks like a bargain now. Second, I think even they were not entirely convinced that he'd be able to sustain that type of production, 40 goals, 80 points. It was almost like, hey, you did it once, go out and prove it. And so even if he just got to that same level again, the Stars were in a spot where they were laughing, like saying, like, okay, yeah, $7.5 million is a bargain. Like, we'll be fine. He just needs to stay where he was, let alone what he's done this year and exceed it. 14 even strength goals, too, has been a big part of it. Mm-hmm. He's just been a special player. And you know what's crazy watching the Stars is when you look at this season and how well Dallas has played as a group, it's not just Robertson and Rupe Hintz has been a monster, but Jamie Benn, like, where did this come from? You know, if you looked at the stat board last week and the leaders, you'd say, you know, even for the month of November, Jamie Benn for a while had more goals and points also than Connor McDavid for the month of November. Mm-hmm. And you're saying Ben's up there and Erik Karlsson's up there. What year is this? Did we just travel back to 2014 overnight? Like, what happened? So they're getting the production from Sagan as well, who's had a strong start to his year. And all of a sudden, the Stars team looks like a team that could be a true Stanley Cup contender.
Yeah, the Pete DeBoer first-year bump. That's all he does in first years, right? He goes to Stanley Cup Finals, Western Conference Finals. He has undoubtedly a strong impact right away with wherever he seems to go. Do you think there's any... I mean, you can't even quibble, really, with this Jason Robertson contract because it's so, so good. But if there was a chance to get the 6-7 years, I'm sure it was on the table. Do you think Dallas would have signed up for it now, given what we've seen?
I think there are a number of teams right now that are kicking themselves with the start of this season saying, man, we should have just bit the bullet. Because, like, what would Robertson have real – like, so they were able to get 4 years, which is really kind of impressive. So maybe they're fine, and maybe they're satisfied with it. But how much more was it really going to cost you? The truth is they just didn't have the cap space to get it done, to squeeze him in. They would have had to trade someone before training camp started in order to be cap compliant. But I think of another guy in New Jersey, Jesper Bratt, in the season that he's had. Oh, man, it feels like they're going to really regret going down the arbitration path and squeezing him into a one-year deal at 5.4, because his start to the season, 25 points in 22 games, has been ridiculous. The Devils have been unreal, and that is going to be an expensive next contract the way that they grinded him.
And both the players you mentioned have been, you know, basically one of the major driving forces for their teams having incredible starts here. One of the teams that I was most excited for at the beginning of the season were the New York Rangers. But what's gone wrong there? I was excited. I thought they even had Stanley Cup aspirations, but it just hasn't. It's been underwhelming.
Very underwhelming. I think there's a number of teams in that category as well. I think you'd have to talk about the Calgary Flames and their start as well. Remember how long we've been talking about Vancouver and their brutal start to the season? I mean, don't look now, but Vancouver is tied in points with Calgary and 1 point back of the Edmonton Oilers. I know there's a games played disparity. Vancouver has played one more than both of them, but still, there have been some underwhelming starts from teams that had legitimate cup aspirations. And what's most surprising about the Rangers, Eilish, is just some of the quotes that I'm seeing and reading from their team. It seems to be discombobulated. It seems to be, I don't want to say disorganized, but it certainly seems to be of question when you have someone like Chris Kreider out there saying, we know what we need to do to win, and we take the wrong path every single time. like stuff, hearing a paraphrased quote like that, it really starts to draw your eyebrows and attention to it, saying, well, if they know and they're not doing it, what is it? Is it a personnel issue? Is it improperly built roster? I don't see that, but I mean, maybe there needs to be more of a reliance on defending and defense in order for that team to claw its way out of where they are.
And that's how I was kind of hopeful about the Rangers. I thought the same as Ailish. I mean, if your team is built around that top 4D and that brilliant, brilliant goaltender, you're going to have a chance to win more often than not. But even with that and their inability to defend at the highest level, they're being exposed a little bit because there are other issues with that group. If those four plus Shesterkin aren't at the top of their game, then it's not going to work as well as it needs to. No such issues apply to the Boston Bruins, who have now set a record for home wins to start a season, continue to be a freight train moving at high speed. But the next four games could be pretty instructive here, with Tampa, Colorado twice, and Vegas looming over about a week and a half stretch, so at least they get some time between those games. I wonder if the next four games might give some information to management in any way where they can size themselves up against really, really good teams and figure out how they can improve. I mean, we talk about the Leafs, how they can improve all year long, how they can spend the Muzzin money. How do you think the Bruins can get even better than what they are? Maybe beyond Patrick Kane, is there anything that they can do or anything that seems like they can improve on as they look to parlay this start into a championship-style season?
I bet even management is sitting there saying, okay, like, can we get back to normal now? Like, we're going to hit a bump in the road here. Like, let's at least see it and let's see how our team reacts. The way that everything's been more or less perfect to this point, at least on the ice, it's kind of been amazing to watch. And it's also incredible to think that as well as Boston has played, and I know the Leafs have played two more games, the Leafs are only five back now. That's bananas as well. Also an aside, but I think if you're the Bruins, you have to be looking down the middle. They're in a spot where they probably, you know, they could use another defenseman at some point, I would imagine. But the big question mark is, yes, you've got Bergeron and Krejci down the middle, and it's so impressive the way that team has played with those guys leading the charge. But what's next? Like, this team we know has some serious Last Dance vibes to it. What's the next step? Like, how do they carry the torch forward after this? Who's going to play center for this team in a starring role? And that's why I've continued to look at a possibility like a Bo Horvat or someone of that stature down the middle to really help that team, not just now, but also later. So center would be the spot that I think the Bruins would be looking if they're going to try and improve between now and the deadline.
What a terrifyingly perfect move that would be. Because you're right, it's Last Dance in a lot of ways, and that's such an advantageous position to be in because you have every excuse to just pay whatever you need to pay to get better because you're trying to take advantage. But if you can get a guy like Bo Horvat and immediately give him the Patrice Bergeron money on an extension, it would just keep the line rolling and it wouldn't feel as bad if you gave up first round picks for rentals. But either way, it doesn't really matter. They're justified in their actions because this is the year to go after it, with maybe no more years left for Patrice Bergeron, although I don't know, maybe he'll come back and do it again because it makes all the sense in the world given the strength of that team and that he can still play the game at a really high level. Frank, appreciate you jumping on with us. Enjoy the U.S. Game against, who was it again?
Iran.
Do or die with Iran. Very, very exciting. We'll, I guess, have a keener interest in that now that Canada has no more meaningful games left. Appreciate it, Frank.
Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
So no CBA violations, Frank. No winks, no nudges. But do we believe Mark Giordano's not going to play going to be a front office member one day?
He'll be another one of the assistant GMs that we have.
And it's because of the resume more than anything else. Like, he's an impressive guy. He's a guy you'd want in your organization. No winks, no CBA violations, but maybe a future for old Giordano.
Certainly something to chew on. And it's time for something to chew on. Brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Canada's a tennis country. Move over soccer because we always have tennis. Canada won their first ever Davis Cup title yesterday. You might not have been watching, but you should be, because the World Championship of Tennis is the Davis Cup, and your Canadians not only won it, but won it on a pretty great showing. They defeated Australia Sunday, but they defeated Germany in the quarterfinals Thursday, Italy on Saturday in the semis, swept their two singles matches against Australia on Sunday, and this is all after being swept 4-0 by the Netherlands back in qualifying in March, and they've come such a long way from this. It's like, it's incredible to be a tennis fan in Canada right now. And I know when the majors end in the summer, like, kind of shifts focus, but look what Canada's able to do, and definitely got to be giving them their flowers. But it's incredible. Like, winning the Davis Cup, which you mentioned, feels like it goes on forever. It certainly does, but
it's hard to track.
It is hard to track. But we need to give Canada tennis a lot more love in this country.
Hey.
Because they're bringing home championships.
Sporting infrastructure is so, so important. Who thought of tennis as, or Canada as a tennis country 5-10 years ago? Mm-hmm. Pretty much nobody. And Croatia is the same. As I mentioned, the first block, 4 million population, and you produce world-class players. If you put the infrastructure in, you have a chance, especially in a sporting nation like Canada. That's why it's on Canada Soccer to continue this momentum forward. We've been accused of having some pretty poor soccer takes, so I won't give you a uneducated Davis Cup take. Other than, yeah, it seems like it takes forever, but it's a great, great accomplishment.
You know
for
what? The Davis Cup has been around since 1900.
There you go. Nothing but prestige.
You were at the inaugural tournament.
I was there.
You remember. And it'll be, like, obviously stated that there were some significant players not on the squads that they faced. Germany had their Olympic gold medals not there. Italy was missing two of their top singles. Nick Kyrgios was not there. Whatever. Canada found a way to win. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters.
And speaking of things you might be hungry for, we're doing a little contest. Another yum, yum, yum. We're teaming up with McDonald's to give away $250 in gift cards for the holiday season to spread some holiday cheer to you. But you got to text in your favorite holiday movie at 590-590 to be entered to win a chance for the $250 gift card for McDonald's. We're giving away another prize pack next week, so tune in. But your favorite holiday movie, 590-590, feed your soul with a little McDonald's, which I had this morning. That's where I got my coffee from. I felt like I can mention it now since we're doing a sponsorship with them. They are open 24 hours right at the corner of our office. So thankful to them, because there are few coffee shops open at 5 a.m., let me tell you that. Mm-hmm. Like one or two in the city.
McDonald's is always there for
McDonald's
you.
McDonald's knows.
What would you do with $250 of McDonald's money?
I'd probably buy a lot of coffees.
You'd go like the responsible route, like this is my morning for the next month?
Or I would wait for like some sort of gathering and just load up quarter pounders for the friends, like buckets of fries, and look like a beauty and not mention that I had a $250 gift card.
Just like purely nuggets. Christmas party, just bring $250 worth of nuggets. I think that's my move.
All right. The texts are pouring in here. I just want to say mine quickly before we take a break. It's a Wonderful Life. It's a tradition that I watch it with my mom and my family on Christmas Eve.
Aww.
It makes me emotional every time. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie.
Mine's The Grinch Who Stole Christmas.
Oh, of course.
That's what I want to.
Basic.
Every year, we got to watch that. What do you mean basic?
I'm kidding.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's beautiful. I like that we have the variety
here. And not the
here.
Jim Carrey one, the animated one.
Nice. All right, text that in 590-590 for a chance to win a $250 gift card for McDonald's, spreading some holiday cheer. We're going to talk to Ross Tucker after the break, who also has a holiday-themed gift for you, which we will tell you about after the break. It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Keep your texts coming at 590-590. Let's talk a little football with Ross Tucker, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Westwood One analyst, joining us now. How's it going, Ross?
It's going awesome. How are you guys doing?
Good. Did you have a nice American Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been home for American Thanksgiving in a while, so that's kind of a bummer. But I love what I get to do, and a lot of people, friends and family texted me as they were driving somewhere, listening to me calling the Cowboys-Giants game, which was fun. And then I went out to San Diego for a college football game Saturday night and got back yesterday. So such is the life I've chosen. It's funny. It really is funny, by the way. Like, ever since I was in the NFL, holidays are just a little bit different. Yeah. You know, it's like when you're in the entertainment industry, it's just, you know, for the most part, Thanksgiving, Christmas, even New Year's Eve, it's a little bit different now in the media. I can do some of that stuff. But as a player, I can still remember my second year in the NFL. I was playing for the Cowboys. And on Christmas Eve, I happened to be on the phone with my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time. And she's like, "Where are you?" And I said, I'm in the drive-thru at McDonald's. And it was Christmas Eve dinner, and I went to the McDonald's drive-thru. I'm 23 years old. I don't know. There's like nothing's open. Where else am I going to eat? And I'll never forget my wife's mother, my mother-in-law now, heard that, and my wife said to her, "Ross is in the drive-thru at McDonald's," and my mother-in-law's like salt of the earth, Central Pennsylvania. She thought that was the worst thing she had ever heard, that Christmas Eve dinner, someone was in the McDonald's. She was, "Oh, my gosh, that is horrible." Like, it's not that bad. Like, I'm going to get a couple cheeseburgers. Like, it'll be okay.
Well, that's the sacrifice you make when you're a big deal and you're calling games and you're, you know, you get the pedigree you have. We got to ask you one more thing about the holiday season. You have myfrontpagestory.com, which everybody needs to check out. I don't know if we've talked about it yet this year, because it's now around the corner. Give us a little rundown of myfrontpagestory.com. And if there's deals, it's Cyber Monday. You better be giving people a discount, Ross.
There's definitely a deal. I don't know what it is, but if you go to myfrontpagestory.com, you can get it. Here's what I know. Literally, just go check it out. It's so cool. You talk to one of the writers about whoever you want to get the gift for. They write the most unbelievable story. It can be for your mom or your significant other. It doesn't really matter. Maybe it's a colleague. It doesn't matter. And it looks like it's on the cover of the newspaper. It's beautiful. It's framed. And the two coolest things by far, Ailish, because I've seen this, right? You give it to someone. They're opening it up. They don't really know what it is. They're like, "Wait, what is this?" And when you say to them, "I want to do something special for you, so I had a story written about you," that just sounds so good. Like, it's so much better than, like, "I got you a new set of earbuds." You know what I mean? like, "I had a story written about you." And then when they actually read the quotes, I don't know why, but it's crazy emotional. I mean, I've seen so many videos now of women, like, crying or whatever, happy tears, because when they read, like, "I just never thank her enough for all the little things she does." That's the line, by the way. Fellas, if you're listening, that's the money line. Make sure you say that. Never show her enough appreciation for the little things that she does. Because even if there are no little things, she'll be like, "Oh, he understands. He gets it. He sees all the little things I do." MyFrontPageStory.com. Trust me, MyFrontPageStory.com.
Well, keep that in mind, because it's about that time of year where I get super, super desperate for gift ideas for whoever I've got to buy for. So we'll keep that in mind, Ross. Okay, let's get to what we saw this week in the NFL. You saw the Cowboys up close, saw the Eagles in primetime last night. I wonder what you think the difference is, if any, between these two teams right now in terms of, like, the NFC representation in the Super Bowl. How close is it between the Eagles and Cowboys for NFC supremacy?
I think it's probably pretty close. I think, obviously, the Eagles being, what, 2.5 games up, essentially, on the Cowboys to win the division is significant, because it'll be a lot tougher road for the Cowboys, right? They're going to have to win three road playoff games, it would look like, as opposed to the Eagles, who would just have to win two home games.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big difference, man. I mean, that is a really big difference. In terms of on the field, I think that the Eagles are probably a little bit more well-rounded, although the Cowboys are running the ball better now. Cowboys defense is playing pretty well. I think maybe one of the differentiating factors is I feel like the Eagles actually have more weapons, which is why the Cowboys are trying to get Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, Devontae Smith as a number two receiver is pretty darn good. Quez Watkins is a number three. I feel like they're better than the Cowboys are there. And then I also think while Dak can run, he's not as much of a threat and as consistent running the football as Jalen Hurts, which gives the Eagles a little bit of an edge. But they're similar. I mean, there's a bunch of good teams in the NFC now. The Vikings are good. The Niners are good. What before was looking like a bad conference now looks like a good one.
So back in my university days, I had a roommate who was a Miami Dolphins fan. And one weekend we're watching in the basement, and the Denver Broncos with Jay Cutler go for two. I don't know which team they were playing, but went for two to try and win the game. And we mocked him relentlessly for months and years after because he switched from a Dolphins fan to a Broncos fan in that moment because he was so excited about a team going for two to win it in an NFL game. It was only shocking to him, and like it prompted the affiliation change because we don't see, or we didn't see, that sort of thing back then. But now, over the weekend, we just saw two-point conversions to win, with the Chargers and Jaguars winning games on two-point conversions in the dying seconds. Why is this now in vogue? Like, why is this acceptable now and was never even thought of back then?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that it wasn't thought of, but I just think in general back then, almost everything coaches did was more conservative because they were concerned about, you know, the fallout if they didn't do the conservative thing, if they didn't kick the extra point to go to overtime and sudden death, which, by the way, is really interesting, right? Because going to overtime is probably about a 50-50 proposition. You don't know what's going to happen with the coin toss. Well, going for two is essentially about a 50-50 proposition these days. So it's not like this is some crazy math or some big analytics decision, right? Like, it's so funny because if they had both failed, I feel like the conversation would be like, analytics is ruining American football. Analytics, they never should have gone. It's not even analytics. Like, analytics is just using the win probability of different decisions to help make informed decisions. But going for two in those situations, really late in those games like that, was pretty much just like a 50-50 proposition. And the coaches felt good about the play they had, and they felt like they had the momentum, and they wanted to go for it, and they both got it. But this upcoming week, it could just as easily be two guys go for it, and they don't get it. I will say this, and this has been a little bit of a pet peeve of mine. Isn't it so much better than like a tie?
Oh, yeah.
It's so much better. I mean, I don't know. Canada is in the World Cup, right?
Ugh, loosely, touchy subject loosely this now, morning. Yeah.
Okay, well.
But yes, technically.
In the U.S., all I've heard for 72 hours is how tying England was a good result. Get it? I am so sick of that term. I understand soccer's lower scoring. I understand England, I guess, is better. I understand the point system. But, like, you will never convince me that a tie is a good result. Like, you'll never convince me of that. I'll also say this, by the way. When I played soccer from age 6 to age 12, I like the sport. It's a fun sport. I like it. I think it's great. You cannot tell me that, like, watching England-U.S. in that soccer match is even in the same stratosphere as watching, like, the red zone during the end of these games. I mean, it's like, I would have a tough time believing that a human being that has functioning eyesight would tell me that they would rather watch a soccer match that goes 0-0 than watching like the Red Zone when the Saints and the Chargers and the Raiders are all in the Red Zone on the goal line at the same time. And I don't know what it's like to take heavy drugs, but I'm guessing it's kind of cool like that. I don't know. I mean, it's just like, you cannot tell me, okay? You cannot tell me that that's a better viewing experience.
You're definitely on something. I mean, we're touchy subject here with Canada soccer today. We would have loved a tie, though.
Yeah,
so,
we would have killed for a tie.
All right, so a team that didn't need to do a two-point conversion was the New York Jets, who... Did Mike White end Zach Wilson's career yesterday?
No, because it's just one game.
I mean, he looked pretty good.
He did look great, but that's what happened last year too, is Mike White came in and played really well for a game, and then, like, the next two, he was terrible. So, if he keeps playing like that, he did. But he's got to keep it up. You know, that's the thing about the NFL or pro sports, or certainly that position. It's about consistency. It's about doing it week in and week out. There's a lot of guys that can kind of be, you know, one-night wonders, so to speak, especially against the Bears defense.
My favorite stat from yesterday was that the 49ers haven't allowed a point in the last 4 second halves. But it makes me think, yeah, they're definitely a competitive team in the NFC, but they're still just not optimized. Like, I wonder if they're just wasting away what is this immensely talented team with a quarterback that they didn't really want, and they wanted something else, and that didn't work out. Now they have to go back to Jimmy G. Like, how do you grade this 49ers team when it looks like they have so much potential? They could be so annoying. They could be there in the NFC in the end, but can they win a Super Bowl if they don't have a better quarterback?
Yeah, you know, I find that argument interesting. Like, they've been in the NFC Championship game 2 out of the last 3 years, and if Jaquaski Tart holds on to the pass from Stafford, they win that game and they go to the Super Bowl. And who knows what happens if they go to the Super Bowl at that point. And even the Super Bowl they lost to the Chiefs, you know, they had opportunities in that game. Like, if the argument is that Jimmy G's not an MVP candidate or he's not as good as Patrick Mahomes, like, okay, yeah, I mean, he's not. But I also think it's weird that people are, like, wondering if he's – I mean, they've had a lot of success with him. They've won a bunch of, like, tough road playoff games with him. They've obviously shown they can do it with him as their quarterback.
I guess the question should be, if they had a top 10 quarterback, are they – the best team in the NFL? Are they the second best team in the NFL? Like, if they had a different – upshot back there, what could they be?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Last week, all I kept hearing all over the internet and Twitter on my feed at Ross Tucker NFL was literally during that Monday night game against the Cardinals, how many times did you guys see, watch out for the Niners, look out, here come the Niners, like, nobody wants to play the night. I mean, it's like, can you just relax? They're beating the Cardinals in Mexico City. Like, but every you know, just because Debo made a play and McCaffrey made a play, people already act like they're the best team in the NFC. And I think they're in the mix. I don't think there's that much of a difference right now between any of those four teams. I think they're all pretty good. I think Cowboys, Eagles, Niners and Vikings are all pretty darn good. And I would have thought maybe the Bucs had a chance, but they looked bad yesterday. Bucs, I have a tough time. Tom Brady or no Tom Brady, I have a tough time picturing the Bucs going on a big playoff run. But the other four are, I don't know. I got to do my power rankings tomorrow for the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. But all four of those teams are top 10 teams in the NFL and maybe top 8 teams they're good. I think the Niners are very, very good and capable of going to the Super Bowl. I think all four of those teams are capable of going to the Super Bowl. The thing is I think it's tough to win, you know, three playoff games. I think it's tough to win a couple of them on the road. I think we've seen that, which gives the Eagles a distinct advantage. They just have a much easier path.
No longer in that conversation is the LA Rams, the defending Super Bowl champions, are in a world of hurt right now. And Sean McVay is in a world of hurt after taking that hit on the sideline from one of his players. I guess it's kind of a snapshot of the season for the LA Rams and McVay. But I wonder, like, what was the hardest hit you've taken in a football game? And I'm sure it happened on the field rather than on the sideline.
You know what? That's so funny that you said that. There's several, but the one that really jumps out to me is 2004. I was playing center for the Buffalo Bills. Drew Bledsoe threw an interception against the Patriots. And, you know, I learned a really painful lesson. Got to be super careful when you try to make a tackle. When that thing switches, you got to be super careful, because like a moron, I tried to make the tackle and Roosevelt Colvin blindsided me. Oof. And I got drilled. The first thing that hit the ground was the back of my head. And I was in a fog for a while. I didn't go to the trainers, so I guess I was never diagnosed with a concussion, but I was like, I was out of it for a few minutes. Like, I was not unconscious, but I was just like, I don't know. It was not good. But our other center had already broken his kneecap in the game. And I remember one of the other offensive linemen was like, Tuck, are you okay? Like, are you okay, man? I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. I was definitely not okay. But that's the one that stands out to me. There's others that it's like, holy crap, that was a heck of a collision. But that's the one that really jumps out to me.
Yep, it's all about the game state changing. And, that's a little dangerous when things get a little wacky with a change of possession out there. I got one more for you here, Ross. And sorry to bring up, I guess, past, you know, trauma there. But
no, it's all right.
Ron Rivera, he's turned.
At this point, like, it's just, like, a good story. Like, I'd rather, like it hurt a lot. It was bad. Like, I might as well get some good stories or content out of it, you know?
There you go. Just making sure. I got an idea for you. Ron Rivera, coach of the year.
I can see that. I can see that he's done an awesome job. I think there's probably better candidates that are out there. But I do think, you know, because the whole year counts, right? Like, them getting off to a slow start still counts.
Mm-hmm.
There's other guys, you know, Mike McDaniel with the Dolphins or whomever, that I think you could – Kevin O'Connell with the Vikings. I mean, they're 9-2. There's other candidates out there, but I do think if there was like a mid-season coach of the year, like a most improved coach during the season, I think Ron Rivera would be up there.
End of season will count too, so we'll see how far the Washington Commanders can take it. But if they get comfortably into postseason position, based on that start, I think it's a pretty good story. But again, there are a few other good stories to tell this year. That's Ross Tucker. Appreciate you jumping on with us, and we'll chat again on Monday.
Sounds great. See you guys.
Speaking of great stories to tell, myfrontpagestory.com. Check it out. Ross Tucker, the writer, storyteller. I'll make your Christmas wishes come true.
You mentioned Cyber Monday for myfrontpagestory.com.
I did.
But it was Cyber Money Monday. Money. Spending,
they
burning
will be
money.
Spending money.
Cyber Monday it is today. And, of course, Black Friday week. And it's really extended. Like,
no, it's forever.
You want that
until
deal.
Until January 8th.
Yeah, you want
sales.
That deal on the TV? Well, from, like, you know, mid-November to 3 days beyond Christmas, you can pretty much get that deal on that TV. So I don't know if there's really that rush anymore. But I wonder if you, in a busy weekend, did any shopping.
Buddy, I got a...
Buddy.
Buddy, I have a air fryer.
Your, like, pose while you said...
I have an air fryer that I am seriously considering, because I think there was that phase and I didn't get in on it. Now they're cheap and I want some crunchy potatoes. Like, I could get an air fryer. And the new place I moved into has way more cabinet space. That's essential because... you can't have that in a small condo. It's going to sit on your counter with your coffee maker. So maybe an air fryer, I'm pondering.
Because I'm all about the air fryer life, as
get
is,
it?
My only suggestion, it's definitely get it. My only suggestion, though, big vat.
Ooh.
If you want to feed more than one person,
that's true.
You need a big
vat. There are different quart sizes, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got to go with the big quart.
Okay.
Big quarts. Big quarts energy. Because if you don't, you're only feeding yourself, or you're doing like multiple runs of it.
I don't want that.
And yeah, that's, it's quick, but it's not quick if you have to do it like four or five times a
month. I also need new AirPods because they die within about 29 minutes of functioning. And only the right one dies, and then I'm walking around with like one AirPod in. So I could probably, you know, when I got those,
I will say, 2017. You have a different pair of headphones every time I see you.
I have two pairs of headphones. I got them in like 2017.
You have at least three.
I've had them for like over 5 years at this point. Okay, I think it's time to
time to refresh.
I'm looking for good deals. Yeah, send me in your Cyber Monday thoughts, but send us in your Wake and Rake picks. You can make some money to spend on Cyber Monday, which becomes Toonie Tuesday, Way Off Wednesday, Thrifty Thursday, Black Friday 2.0, just continues. You can save money on everything because nobody ever ends their sales. $5.90, $5.90, your Wake and Rake picks. We got three games to set up tonight. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk to Jeff Blair, run down the emotions of Canada soccer ending their competitive run at the World Cup with a loss 4-1.
Was he more entertained than Ross Tucker was?
We'll see.
I think so, probably.
We'll see. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ayler, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.